This is the Paul Molitor Show, your chance to hear directly from the manager on the state of your team. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atterbury and Jack Morris.
Yeah, and for the first time in a couple of weeks, that's the case. Jack Morris is back from the road trip. Outstanding effort on television, working with the Duke, keeping the Duke in line as the Twins were in Oakland and Anaheim. And Jack, we spared you the early morning wake-up call, but we're very excited to have you back in studio here today.
Yeah, good to be back. Had a heck of a couple of weeks, but a lot of it was great. All-Star game certainly was fun. I was able to interview the two Minnesota Twins All-Stars for MLB.com. That was a lot of fun. And go on the West Coast trip with the Twins and, get things started right. So it was good.
Yeah, a little All-Star duty, a little West Coast duty. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take our first break right out of the chute. We'll throw the number out there, too, 877-388-9467, 877-38-TWINS. Let's get the first break out of the way. Give us more time to talk with manager Paul Molitor when we return to the Paul Molitor Show on your home for Twins baseball. It's the Paul Molitor Show here, live from our network headquarters at Target Field. Jack Morris is here. Paul Molitor is here. And we are all set to go. And Paul, last night, not one that goes down the way you would like to see it go down. But one thing Danny and I have been talking about all week, maybe the strength of this team so far has been a short memory. You enjoy the wins just so long, and then you come out and start from scratch the next day in the same way with the tough losses. Do you like the resiliency of your team so far in 2015?
Well, first of all, good morning. It's one of those things where I do think that, 95 games, whatever it is that we're into the season, we have been a team that's been able to have relatively short memories. I think there's been times when maybe a given game has carried over a little bit, but for the most part, I think the guys come back refreshed and clean slate, if you will, as far as heading into the next game. And it's worked both in wins and losses. I think they're kind of – we've had help with the veteran players, but you learn that mentality of what you have is really concentrate on today's game, regardless of how you got here or who's pitching or what's going on. Let's do what we can to try to win today.
Paul, one of the things that I've noticed this year that I have not noticed up until this year is that Target Field has somehow become a home field advantage for the Twins. The big series against Detroit prior to the All-Star break kind of propelled that, and then the first game back here against the Yankees, you guys went out and really took control of that game,
right?
Played a great game, and the crowd was here to support it. Last night, certainly is going to be a little bit of a letdown, but I anticipate that the crowd will be into it again today. Your thoughts about the home field advantage here?
Well, Jack, I think it's really valid to realize that it's been a very important part of where we are at this juncture of the season, because we've played particularly well at home. You can talk about those things, which we did, spring training, the start of the season, about trying to do a little bit better job of protecting our own building here and our own field and our own turf. We haven't really done a very good job of that since the first year it opened in 2010. But, the guys have to go out there and make it happen. And I think they have established a little bit of a comfort zone and a confidence level when they play here that has translated into winning more games at home. So it's not anything magical. I just think you got to understand that when you're in your park, you want to make other people feel uncomfortable. You want to play confidently. And when you have talented players performing, that's probably the biggest ingredient to that. But it's been nice to see that we've been able to play better at home.
Also shed the idea Target Field was allegedly this hitter's graveyard. Nobody could hit the ball out. To me, Target Field plays extremely fair. You square it up, no matter which uniform you're wearing, it's going to go if you put the right swing on it. And I don't know if either of you guys have noticed a difference, but all that talk about how you can't hit it out at Target Field, we don't seem to be hearing that anymore.
Well, I think obviously it played bigger than the Metrodome, and I think you're right that as players transitioned into this facility, it became a little bit of a psychological factor for some guys that were coming in here, whether it was back when, Joe and Justin and Jason Kubel and whoever else you want to say that kind of were affected by the ballpark. I think we've kind of learned to just play. When it happens as far as going over the fence. And I think Jack's right. We're getting that that crowd response as of late this year too, which has really, I think, propelled our players somewhat. And I think today will be a good atmosphere for us to try to come back and win the series.
One of the things I've noticed about this field is in the summertime, in the hot, humid days, the ball seems to travel. I noticed that when I played in Detroit.
Sure.
I'm sure you noticed that in Milwaukee when you were there. It's just balls travel when it heats up for whatever reason. I don't know the physics behind it, but, you know, my eyeballs have seen it.
Well, I remember back in Legion Ball and in Siebert Field, you know, when it got hot, the ball started flying. So I think there's something to that unless you get some kind of strange wind. But for the most part, as the summer heats up, our ballpark becomes more hitter-friendly.
You know, guys, keeping the ball in the ballpark, big part of your Friday win. Phil Hughes, we started even on opening day, ran a piece about, is he going to throw more changeups? Is he going to do this or that? We never really – it's kind of been a gradual, slow ascension for Phil, but kept the ball in the ballpark for the first time in eight games. And more importantly, he's on a roll now, in particular at home, but he has been on a roll the second half of the season in terms of looking so much more like the Phil Hughes we got spoiled by every five days last year.
I think heading into the break, you know, it was a few, two or three starts prior. Certainly coming out of the break, he's throwing the ball better, obviously a lot more confident in what he's doing and how he's using his pitches. You know, there was a time maybe, you know, 6 weeks ago or so, he tried to get that changeup in the mix, but, you know, he'd throw a couple bad ones and he'd kind of just put it on the shelf till the next start to see if he'd have a better feel. But he's been staying with it a little bit more. And I think games where he has leads, obviously you have more confidence to try things. But it was nice to see the other night, you know, he used his fastball cut early, but curveball started coming around. The changeup became a big pitch his last couple innings of work. You know, after I'd say probably so-so start for him as he tried to get his feet on the ground and his season coming off of what he did last year, it's been all uphill since there. He's been riding a nice wave, and hopefully that continues for Phil.
One of the things that veteran pitchers have to do is constantly adjust as their career goes on. Mm-hmm. And we've seen Phil, you know, a little bit stubborn maybe with the fastball cutter because of the great success he had last year. I know of talking to Neil Allen, he's encouraged him to try to throw the breaking ball. With that being said, I think it's probably harder, and I want your opinion on this, for a veteran player to make adjustments than a young player, because a young player hasn't really experienced that much failure or success, so they're going to trust more opinions of, the number one, their catcher, and number two, their pitching coach, where a guy that's had success and just doesn't feel like he's got confidence in a pitch because of the feel for it, sometimes that's a little more challenging.
I think that's probably a accurate point in that, you know, a guy has success doing what he's doing. He's not going to try to break that mold very often. And, you know, you try to plant new seeds. Neil's obviously tried to do some of that. And it takes, you know, situations where on a particular day you have a feel for a pitch that you're trying to use more and it's working and you're getting outs, and it'll start to click a little bit. But I know even as a hitter, Jack, as a veteran guy, you know you have to make adjustments, but you're a little stubborn for a while. You say, well, I can still do it the old way I used to do it. But over time, you learn that adjusting as you go, especially as you get on with your career, it's an important part of sticking around.
Staying in the rotation, Irvin Santana, two big wins, big outings for you on this last road trip, and in different ways. Facing different teams, he used different parts of his arsenal to be equally successful in both of those outings. What has he meant to your rotation, and what have you seen now that you've had a chance to watch Irvin go through the turn a couple of times?
You know, we all know in spring training it was great to see him part of our club. He pitched well this spring and preparing for the season, and we had to deal with the setback. But he's had four starts now, three of them very high quality. The second time here, his first game at Target Field was not his best. But it was fun to watch him pitch this last trip. You know, to come out of the break and go up against Oakland's best. And really, for whatever reason, I don't know if it was by design or just by what he had, he didn't have velocity that we had been accustomed to seeing, and yet he kept making pitch after pitch. And, you know, had a brilliant game, you know. And then he comes back in Anaheim after we lose four in a row. You want a guy to step up and put zeros up, and that's exactly what he did. And that was a little bit more dominating in terms of, you know, being able to use his fastball more regularly. And it just shows that he's got different ways he can get you out depending on the day. He's very cool customer on the mound. Hoping that trend continues, you know, he's going to be hopefully fresh for us the majority of the second half after not having to pitch a ton of innings here leading up to the break. So it's been good to see. He's really picked us up a couple of times.
Some rotation talk with Paul Molitor, Jack Morris. We're going to take a break here on the Paul Molitor Show. Talk bullpen when we return, and also some of the other issues creeping up towards the trade deadline. Also a big weekend in Cooperstown. We'll get Paul's thoughts on that as well. It's all coming up on the Paul Molitor Show right here on your home for Twins baseball. Welcome back to the Paul Molitor Show. Jack Morris is here. Paul Molitor, of course, is here as well. We talked quite a bit there about the rotation, Paul. I want to talk about your bullpen. Trevor May last night with a big strikeout of Brian McCann. First chance, really, we've seen him to come in a tight spot in that eighth inning setup role. Is that where you want to see him? Is this just part of the process of figuring out how to maximize the talent available to you?
You know, he's been out there for a while since he came out of the rotation, and we've obviously wanted to get him a little comfortable and coming into games. And over time, we've kind of talked a lot about seeing how he would respond to protecting leads late in the games, whether it's a seventh or eighth inning. And it just hasn't been a lot of situations that have come up where it worked out. Last night was one of those days where we had got Casey an inning of work the night before, trying to get him on a little bit better track. And, you know, I wasn't down there for the eighth inning last night, but we kind of had talked about seeing if it would be a night to get Trevor in that role, and he responded. You know, I think he's learning how to use his pitches a little differently coming out of the pen. Not that his four-pitch arsenal still doesn't work as a reliever, but, you know, he can reach back and maybe get that little extra velocity. He did a really nice job after the base hit and the errant throw to first to go ahead and get that last strikeout to get us into the ninth.
Paul, as the trade deadline approaches, how much input do you have? How much conversation do you have with Terry about what your immediate needs are versus what Terry's are and where you go forward from here?
Well, you know, like a lot of things this year, Jack, I'm kind of learning, you know, my voice and how it weighs in different circumstances. Obviously, heading into the trade deadline is something I haven't done as a manager. And so there's been a lot of discussions with Terry about our team. We evaluated our personnel and kind of looked at it at the break. We talked some about needs and areas we possibly could improve upon. But I don't feel that I'm in a position to say, hey, we got to do this, we got to do that. I know Terry, he's much more experienced as I am as far as trying to supplement rosters, heading into, you know, last portions of season when you're trying to make a push to be a playoff team. So he just tells me the phones are ringing. A lot of people are exchanging information about players who might be available, and you start to get a feel of what the cost is going to be, and then you have to decide if something's right for your team. So they're ongoing. I'm sure that he's working it somewhat, but I'm not going to sit here and depend on that. If we do something that improves our team, that'll be great. And then you have to be concerned about how that's going to fit into your club and making sure that the chemistry doesn't get altered, because we feel we've got a good thing going as far as that's concerned. So there's certain things you got to be aware of if you're going to go ahead and make some moves.
You've been around the game a long time, Paul. I've been around the game. Mm-hmm. You know, Chris has been here quite a while himself, and we've all seen, in my opinion, a change in this whole trade deadline stuff. I see with multi-year contracts, teams are really locking up guys, and to some degree, I think a lot of teams over-evaluate their personnel. And therefore, I don't think you see that much movement anymore at the trade deadline. Probably very difficult to make moves. Would you agree or not?
Well, it's definitely changed. I do think the contracts and how we tie up people that are under player control at younger ages and try to buy out maybe a year or two of free agency while they're still arbitration eligible. That all plays into being able to move players when the trade deadline comes around. And then you add to the fact that the format of playoff teams and the extra wild card, the parity that we're seeing, particularly in the game this year, it makes it tough to know which teams are going to be active as far as maybe trying to add young talent to their organization, or a team that might feel that they can go ahead and add a player or two and still stay in the race. So I know there's talk about maybe moving the trade deadline. I'm not sure if that's the best thing or not, but it does make it a little bit more interesting and probably, to your point, a little bit more difficult to try to go ahead and make a deal.
Do need to address today's game a little bit. Yankees, obviously, with a series on the line, it would be a big series to get, and you've got Cal Gibson on the mound. We've talked at length about how we all look forward, I think, to the days when Kyle toes the rubber. Nathan Eovaldi on the other side is an interesting guy. Only other guy from his high school to ever pitch in the big leagues was Nolan Ryan, and Eovaldi, like Ryan, is known for throwing the ball really, really hard. Do you like facing guys like that, the hard-throwing guys, as opposed to the mix-and-match guys with makeup of your lineup?
I think in today's game you see so many pitchers that have higher end velocity that you you know, the guys make adjustments to that. I don't think they're overly uncomfortable with facing high end velocity. It's just a matter of how well the guy commands, what kind of movement does he have on that velocity pitch, as well as do you have to be overly concerned with his off-speed pitches. So this guy's done well. I think, was it 9-2 or whatever it might be? He's got good numbers. He does give up hits, and, you know, he's obviously done a good job of containing when he's got had base runners, hence his record. But, you know, as a player, you just kind of try to watch video. You get a play of get a feel of what a guy's going to try to do in certain situations, and then you try to put together good at-bats. But with Gibson today, you know, we gave him a little extra rest over the break. You know, you can say whether that was right or wrong because he was in a really good role heading into the break. But I think over the long haul, it's going to pay off for him. Command a little bit off coming out of the break in his first start, and we hopefully he comes back and has a good game for us today and gives us a chance to win.
Let's get our last break in, guys. We'll come back, talk a little bit more about today's matchup and the events also in upstate New York this weekend. It's the Paul Molitor Show on your home for Twins baseball. It's the Paul Molitor Show. Twins and Yankees coming up this afternoon. Corey will have Inside Twins just after noon. We'll have the pregame lineup card, and then it's Kyle Gibson versus Nathan Eovaldi. When you look at this Yankee club, Paul, they score a lot of runs, and we saw what they can do with the long ball. This was a team, not unlike the Twins, that the alleged experts didn't think much of coming into the year, but they have managed to cobble together quite a year with that great formula of, hey, we're gonna hit some home runs, score some runs with some veteran players, and oh, by the way, we've got a lockdown bullpen. Makes them a difficult out.
Well, they've had a really good year. You got to give the Yankee organization credit for finding a way to put together a team that's been very competitive over there in the East. You know, they're getting production maybe more so than they thought they would out of a few of the veteran guys that had been maybe trending the other way. They didn't probably know what they're going to get from Alex Rodriguez this year, and sure enough, he's having a phenomenal year, and Teixeira's bounced back, hitting home runs and driving in runs. They're tough to pitch against because they're pretty solid from top to bottom. You know, those two guys at the top are as good as anybody in the league as far as table setters between Ellsbury and Gardner. So, you know, last night, you know, you get a lead against those guys, and you're kind of cautious about going forward because you know they can strike quickly. But they've had a good year. And as you mentioned, some of the starting pitching, maybe not what you would have expected coming into the year. But the guys have done a good job in adding Miller in the bullpen. And, of course, Betances, one of the up-and-coming young relievers in the game. They got a good thing going. They've been scoring a lot of runs. They've been winning a lot of games. And they're looking like they're trying to take control of that division.
Paul, let's shift gears, talk about something that you've been a big part of for quite a while. Cooperstown weekend, the induction ceremony. Talk a little bit about what goes on there and what you expect from the inductees this year.
Well, you know, not to get too long-winded, Cooperstown is an incredible little town in upstate New York that does a phenomenal job of hosting the induction weekend every year. This year we got a great class with four very worthy people being inducted this afternoon, and they just, between James Forbes Clark and Jeff Idelson, the president, they host the weekend in just a very, very professional fashion that, you know, allows the players that are in the Hall of Fame to go out there and enjoy the weekend, support the guys going in, from the parties they host to the golf tournaments, to raise money to the actual induction itself. It's just, it's a lot of fun. I'm sure those guys are having a good time today. It'll be fun to see those guys get in and make their speeches today. First time for me that I haven't been out there when someone's been inducted since I got in, Jack, back in 04, but, you know, I'll be watching from afar, but I'm where I need to be today.
And where you are is at Target Field, and everybody should get on down to Target Field. Big crowd last night, largest in several years, and expect a big crowd today for the rubber match of this three-game series. You know, they always break it off there, you know, with different groups of guys. Who are you? Do you have a group that you generally tend to eat with? I know Seaver's got his group that Bert talks about, and probably no one wants Bert at their table, but where who do you end up palling around with out there?
You know, it's fairly integrated group until the Sunday night dinner, which is a members-only dinner, which is always special. The only people in attendance to the Sunday night dinner other than the members are Jeff Idelson and the commissioner. But yeah, we kind of have our tables. I was kind of a member of the Punch and Judy table, you know, the guys
the banjo table,
the guys that kind of no pop, but you know, they did enough other things to find their way in there. And then you have your kind of your pitcher's table with you know, Seaver and Carlton and Gibson and Don Sutton, those guys, that's the wine tasting table. but we always get, you know, I remember a few years ago it was George Brett, me and Ozzie Smith and people of that type. And Willie Mays came over and started asking us all how many home runs we hit, you know. And in that high-pitched voice, you know, I just kind of sit there and go, man, I can't even believe Willie Mays is coming over to talk to my table. But, yeah, so we kind of stick together and kind of how the type of player that you were.
All right, I guess the table setters will be without one of their table setters here this weekend, but the Twins are going to be the beneficiaries. Paul, good luck with it today. Try to stick around for 9 today, all right?
Yeah, we something different last night, but new day today. Like trying to win series. Hopefully we can do that today.
All right, get out of here. Go get your club ready.
Have a good day, man.
Yeah, it's Paul Molitor. This is the Paul Molitor Show. Jack, we've got about a minute or so to go here. And when you take a look at the matchup here today, we know what Kyle Gibson can do. But against this particular lineup, you know what they want to do. They want to hit the ball in the seats. Kyle's been pretty good about keeping it on the ground this year.
Well, he needs to have a little bit of a bounce back. And whether Paul agrees with me or not, I just feel like the time – he had too much time in his last start, and I think the rhythm should be a little bit better. The command should be a little bit better today. I expect Kyle wanting to really get this team back on track, so I'm looking forward to today's game.
Yeah, it should be a whole lot of fun. Again, it's Kyle Gibson versus Nathan Eovaldi. Now, if you missed any part of our show, go ahead and hunt it up online at twinsbaseball.com. For Paul Molitor, he's Jack Morris, a guy who also should have a seat at a table in upstate New York. It's a shame that he does not. My name's Chris Atterbury. This is the Paul Molitor Show, and this is your home for Twins baseball.
This has been a presentation of the Treasure Island Baseball Network.